This show was brought to you by Ouch My Ego, ouchmyego.com.
Hey everybody, we've got another guest here. His name's Sean Robert, right? Is it?
Yep, that's the pronunciation.
Okay, good. I'm usually pretty good at pronouncing last names anyway. Sean, like, I'm assuming that's how it is, but it could be Sha-un.
Yeah.
Sh-on.
There's so many different ways to spell it.
Sh-on.
Yeah, who knows? I just go by Sha.
You're a podcaster.
Part-time, yeah.
And a web presence.
Yeah, I guess that would be a good way to put it, yeah.
Your web presence is branded in the 80s, am I correct?
I've been doing that for about 11 years.
I'm imagining myself with a hot lamp in front of your face interrogating you. Is that not correct, sir?
That's pretty close. I'm going to put this into an 80s perspective. There's a blender nearby, and I just told a story about puking over the railing of a theater, and you're about to put my hand in the blender. That's what I feel like is happening right now.
Thanks, Chunk.
Yeah.
I know the reference. I get that one. I get a lot of them. So, your blog, branded in the 80s, or your website, is it just a blog spot or is it a website?
It's an actual website. I self-host and everything, but it's basically set up like a blog. I have some reoccurring columns and stuff like that.
So, it is based on admiration of stuff in the 80s, nostalgia from the years that you were
basically.
Born, yes?
Yeah, well, I was born in the late 70s, so I grew up in the 80s, so.
You're like me, I'm 74.
Yeah, okay, so
I'm not 74 years old, that's my year.
Close enough. Yeah, no, I'm 77, so just behind
you. Okay, yeah, all right, that works. So we grew up in the 80s, and you're just younger than me, so that you were actually a bit more rolling around in the toy fun than I was. So I was looking at this movie that we're going to talk about, and I'd never seen it. And then I stumbled upon your website, and I was already like connected to you online, various means, you know, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And then I realized that you had written about it, and I was like, wait, no, I have never seen this. I'm not going to read this, but I'm going to get you as a guest. And you agreed to it.
Mission accomplished. It took a while.
Yeah, it's fine. I really had to hunker down and absorb this flick.
Yeah, there's a lot to take in.
And I tried to do so. So why don't we dive in? You tell me, what did we just watch?
We just watched Rage War.
He is a warrior in a wasteland without mercy.
It's a little guy.
He has survived where countless others have died.
Good shot, huh?
He has destroyed all that would kill him.
We're out of control!
He is the only one who can face the challenges of the Dungeon Master.
You are a worthy opponent.
I don't believe this.
By the power of the Prince of Darkness!
I dub thee
Excalibrate.
Discover the secret of the Statue of Stone, the ungodly demons of the dead, the trap of rat spit, the slime ball, the ordeal of the ice monsters of doom,
my legs are frozen, I can't move my feet,
the attack of the samurai sentinel, the treachery of the monster of good and evil, a warrior trapped in a timeless void, locked in mortal combat against the Overlord to the agonies of strange beasts and lost souls.
Prepare for the end!
The Dungeon Master. Rated PG-13.
Or if you ever watched this on video, maybe for you it was The Dungeon Master?
Yeah, it was, I believe, a Shout Factory redo of the film, like that fancy pants thing that they do on Blu-ray. And so it's like really shiny and it says Dungeon Master.
I cannot believe that this got a Blu-ray release.
Yeah.
I just want to say that right off the bat.
I really missed this one. I had seen a lot of Empire movies. Plenty of them. You know, the Ghoulies, which this has a lot in common with the Ghoulies. Mm. Troll, which this also has a lot in common with Troll. And
was Munchies in that mix?
No, that wasn't an Empire movie, right? And Eliminators, which doesn't really have much in common. And Zone Troopers, whatever. I'm familiar with Empire, which ended up being Full Moon. Empire crumbled. Oh, of course, Empire also did Reanimator. So, I don't know why I missed this one. Other than it wasn't on at all when I was growing up.
Yeah, I would have to imagine that you probably didn't catch this on TV because it's got a weird mix of gore and a little bit of nudity, and it's only like 110 minutes long without like credits and stuff like that. So this might be a hard one to fit like on the Saturday afternoon weekend block or USA Up All Night or something like that. I don't know if Joe Bob ever covered this.
So why don't you break it down? What's the story? You get the dirty work.
Okay, let me see if I can put this in a nutshell for you. So basically, we're following Paul, a computer nerd who has a pseudo-relationship with his computer, who's also romantically involved with a local aerobics instructor. And there's an odd love triangle between said computer, Paul, and Gwen, the aerobics instructor. And if I'm understanding this movie correctly, I believe the computer calls upon the power of Satan to try and break up Gwen and Paul by zapping them into a fantasy world where they face off against Richard Mall, playing a character named Mistima, who is a stand-in for Satan in a weird way, like an evil wizard version of Satan, I guess. There's a bunch of tests that Paul has to pass in order to win back Gwen from Satan, and a lot of very weird stuff happens in the interim. I think that kind of sums it up.
Yeah. So there's one detail that I didn't pick up was the summoning of Satan by the computer, but I actually didn't also pick up that it was a sort of a triangle between the computer. I just thought that Gwen was a Luddite.
Gotcha. So I've seen this twice now, and I watched this once when I wrote about it for my website, and I rewatched it for the show just so I could be fresh and minty on this, because I did not want to get anything wrong on this. I don't want any of these actors to come track me down and prove me wrong for any of the things that I get wrong here. But I have seen, there's a movie called Electric Dreams that's...
Yes.
Yeah, okay, so crazy love triangle, man, woman, computer.
Right.
I didn't make the connection the first time I watched it, but the second time, I'm definitely seeing Electric Dream vibes all over the place with this. And so the computer, which is called Excalibrate in the movie, or Cal for short.
Cal, yeah.
Yeah, if Paul's being endearing to it. When he gets zapped to the fantasy world, the Satan character, Mistima, basically gives him like a wrist panel version of Excalibrate that he can use.
You mean a power glove, a Nintendo power glove.
It is a knockoff power glove for sure. Even though it came before the power glove,
it's a prototype. Totally a knockoff. Come on, it's a prototype. That's there what you it go. Is. Prototype. Nintendo saw this movie and they were like, we got to make one of those.
The two things are going to happen. We're gonna back this movie called The Wizard, and we're going to make a power glove.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like he looks over to his wrist thing when he's down there, and it's like describing the Mistima character, and it's saying that like other names is like Belial and Satan and all this stuff. So
Beelzebub.
Beelzebub, yeah. So when you're watching the movie, there's a couple of key scenes where at the beginning, basically Paul interacts with his computer through his glasses. He's got some kind of a special...
He's got Google Glass.
He's got Google Glass.
With Sally Jessica Raphael frames.
Exactly.
And they're the worst glasses on the planet.
They totally are. They cover half of his face. It's actually kind of amazing.
Yes, for real. Like, in the opening scene, he just wakes up and chases this hot lady who ends up becoming naked.
Mm-hmm.
And he also ends up becoming naked, and they're about to get it on, and then a bunch of ghouls grab her and yank her away. And then he wakes up, and then he puts those glasses on, and I'm like, what? I was with you until the glasses.
Yeah, but first of all, this movie has 7 directors.
Yeah.
So I'm not exactly sure which director was directing the wraparound segments, but there's a scene where they show you those two characters on a bed through the pair of glasses, and I think the idea is that the computer is supposed to be watching them.
Yeah, well, see...
And I think that's why they picked Sally Jessica Raphael
glasses. So because they're big enough.
So you could frame that, yeah.
Yeah, so when that scene happens, he's laying there, there's like some green sort of smoke in both of the lenses, and it starts to focus and zoom through those lenses and looks at him. Then it fades to a fantasy sequence.
Mm-hmm.
We were confused about the transitioning there.
Yeah.
Is it a surreal dream sequence? Is none of this actually happening? Is it actually happening?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure if I watched the movie after I watched the movie. That's how confusing some of this stuff is.
Because by the end of it, we'll just skip to the end. They get away, right?
Yeah.
They get away, come out, they win, whatever. She says, like, yeah, so let's get married, because he proposed to her earlier. And she kind of freaked out because she wanted him to choose between her and the computer.
Mm-hmm.
Now she's like, the computer's cool. And he's like, I don't know about the computer. So I find that to be really weird.
Yeah, it's like, it's not, this isn't the movie for the Graduate ending. this is totally not the time to make that reference. Yeah.
So the devil, what's his name again?
Mistima.
He,
which sounds like a skin condition.
I've got Mistima, it burns.
Well, it's Richard Mall who's bread and butter was these types of roles before he played Bull in Night Court.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, he really enjoys these types of roles.
I know, like, whenever he was not filming Night Court, he grew out his beard as much as he could. He grew out his hair as much as he could, because he had to be bald for that. And I do think that he enjoyed taking on these crazy, like, demon wizard slash...
post-apocalypse.
Highlander villain.
Right, type. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I just find that to be strange, and I wonder what he's doing now. Also, like House, he was just a ghost villain in House, and that's probably his most notable role outside of Night Court. But here, yeah, he's not a dungeon master, but they call him Dungeon Master.
Dungeon Master, Satan, it's all the same.
This is probably pushing to the satanic panic in the 80s, to all the moms and dads who weren't paying attention and then suddenly glanced over at the TV and see Dungeon Master. And they're like,
sure.
What?
Yep.
And then they pick up that little context there that is Satan, and then they're like, what? It says Dungeon Master and he's Satan? Go to your room.
Well, I didn't want to sit with you anyway.
This movie is like in a blender. It's Electric Dreams, Tron, Beastmaster, and a little bit of Mazes and Monsters, a little bit of Mad Max, and a smidge of Maniac.
I was going to mention that, yeah.
Yeah.
So we have 7 trials that our hero Paul is put through. And the absolutely different woman, damsel in distress, from the beginning is Gwen. The beginning was just some naked lady. This damsel in distress is Gwen. And there's a point, the Mad Max sequence, later we'll talk about, which I was very happy with, for one reason. But most of the time, she's just first off, represented as sort of like a Luddite, and then she gets kidnapped, and then she's just like,
Paul, help me!
That's her character. Get me out of here. I'm chained up.
Totally.
It's a Nintendo game. It is. She's chained up. Devil gives out the challenges, which start with the ice gallery.
One of my favorite challenges in this movie. A rogues gallery of frozen villains.
Oh my god, that's Einstein. Oh, there's Bloody Mary. What a weird combo.
And Einstein.
I'm watching this and I'm like, oh, they're all bad guys. They're all villains. There's a werewolf.
Yeah, werewolf, Jack the Ripper, Jungle Warrior, Einstein.
Are they actually being clever here and saying like his involvement in building?
Yes.
I'm totally reading into this, right?
Read right into
his involvement in building the atomic bomb or any of that stuff. Are they saying he's actually a villain?
I don't know. So it's such a weird sequence, because Einstein is also holding a chunk of ice, strangely. Nobody else is. And that's the key to defeating this particular challenge, this trial. So he's sort of helpful, but I do think that they're making the atomic bomb reference, which is really, I don't know.
Okay.
Too much thought for this movie again, maybe.
So maybe you and I are both on the same wavelength when we watch it. Because, yeah, I was like, are they being clever? Or I don't know Charles Band to be that clever.
Yeah, he's usually pretty on the nose, like pretty obvious about his stuff, yeah.
So it's the witch doctor. It's a jungle warrior, you say, but it's witch doctor, wolfman, ripper, samurai, and Bloody Mary, and a mummy.
Yeah, and there's...
But Bloody Mary, she just points out Bloody Mary, but I don't ever see her moving around.
Yeah, no, you just see her holding a head or something like that. Oh, and there's, Richard the something, someone who was guillotined.
Yeah, so they win with that chunk of crystal, however. It's...
Yeah, and of
usually how they win is just lasers.
Yep.
In most of the sequences.
How can I get Excalibrate to make a laser?
Yeah. We've got 7 of these to get through. The next one, Demons of the Dead, which is a cellophane cave. It's not a cave. It's made out of plastic bags, spray painted. And the armored ghouls, there's ghouls, but they have armor and they're slow moving, so they're like zombies, except they actually fight. So that means that they have like a brain. And the puppet that guides them is like this little imp. And this is the troll sequence, or the ghoulies sequence, because I think that's the same crew that made all of those puppets in those movies.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Because it's Empire, right? So it has the same type of face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I really think it's like ghoulies, not the little round-headed ghoulie, the baby ghoulie.
Yeah.
It's a death challenge, and this was great. I think Scott Pilgrim might have ripped off this scene, because Paul has to face off against...
Anti-Paul?
A dark Nega-Paul.
Nega-Paul, yeah.
That's what I wrote down. And they basically have a staring contest, right?
Yeah, which he wins.
Is that... I mean, he just stands there, like, kind of smirking, and the little puppet's like, why are you smiling? And then he poofs.
Yeah, he
it's not even lasers, he just poofs.
No, he wins this one with confidence. And probably my my favorite line in this entire film, which is basically the little ghoulie demon guy kind of summons the voice of Mistima, who's like talking about how this is your reality, this is your destiny. And Paul's like,
I reject your reality and I substitute my own.
You are a bold adversary.
Yeah.
That is the most ridiculous line, but I love it.
In between each of these challenges are clips where Mistima is taunting or threatening more challenges to Paul. In between this one and the next one, he actually gropes Gwen.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then Paul gets really mad and is like, get off of her, and then they have like a video game dragon fight, like Big Trouble in Little China does with the samurais.
Exactly, except it makes Big Trouble in Little China look like Citizen Kane.
Yeah, well, it's just animated, but they're just not even fighting. They're just, like, wiggling, sort of like...
Yeah, they're just kind of, like, flying around each other.
Yeah, they're slowly undulating at each other.
But I will say, it was animated with some great backlit animation, which is my favorite. It, like when you're watching the Transformers cartoons in the 80s, and they make Energon cubes, and it looks all shiny and
yeah,
see-through and translucent-y, this is the kind of animation style that they use for the dragon fight. So it was pretty neat looking for however kind of pathetic it was.
Right, and then that just ends.
You get right down to it.
That just ends. Everything just kind of ends.
Yeah.
And then the next sequence...
Do you fancy music? This is a piece of my own composing.
He's in a heavy metal club, and this is directed by Charles Band. It is the worst sequence in the film.
It is. It's totally just a Wasp video.
Yeah, so...
And not a great Wasp video.
Gwen is still chained up, but she is now wearing a unitard thing, and it's got slashes all over it in strategic spots, so you can kind of see her body, except it's not so explicit or whatever. It's just Wasp, like, singing...
Just Wasp playing, and
a song, I think...
Lead singer Blackie Lawless.
Destroyer or something? Tormentor.
Tormentor, yeah.
That's what it is. Spikes, leather, it's just generic, this is what parents are afraid of.
Yeah, well,
hair band.
That's Wasp in a nutshell. Wasp was that metal band that's like, they were just totally playing to being a metal band, so like, you listen to the lyrics of their songs, and they're talking about the worst stuff. I mean, it's like rape and killing, and it's all the stuff that everyone warned you that metal music would be like, when metal music usually isn't like that, so yeah.
Yeah, and that's actually the lyrics of this song are like that.
It's totally.
It's called Tormentor, and it's talking about all these ways they're going to torment whomever. So they get out. Every time they get out.
Yeah, they always get out.
And it's just some dumb way they get out.
Lasers.
Yeah, lasers. This one actually was lasers. Next one was called Stone Canyon Giant, which is the only bit of stop motion animation that they use.
Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of Sinbad here.
Yeah, something struck me about this. And I think... If it's not for Charles Band's films, in that he is the guy who started Empire Pictures, guy who started Full Moon, and whatever else after Full Moon, and now he's back to Full Moon, I think he's like the major employer of little people in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Because you don't see very many little people in TV or movies very often.
Nah, it has to be a George Lucas movie or George Lucas produced if it's not Charles Band, apparently.
Right. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, this might be the beginning of it. This movie was, what year was this movie made?
Was this like, it's 84.
84. So 83, 84 is when it was being shot. Mm-hmm. Maybe finalized in 84, maybe 83 and released in 84. I don't know. But yeah, they have two little people, one of them that we see time and time again in Charles Band movies. He's usually got facial hair, and I don't think he has it in this movie. That's how young he is.
Yeah.
And so this is another one, laser power glove versus a big stone giant. This is the dumbest thing. They take his glove. The two hobbit dudes take his glove because every time he wakes up in these scenarios... He's unconscious. I said wakes up because he's unconscious. Mm-hmm. And then they put it on an altar. He chases them to the altar, but they're already gone. So he's like, hey, oh, no, my glove's right here. That's all I wanted. And then the thing wakes up and he's like, I gotta laser this guy now. And he does in the end.
I love how video game it is, too. So it's like, not only do you have a giant, like, monkey god stone statue, but he happens to have, like, a very prominent jewel in the center of his forehead that's screaming, shoot me with a laser. So it's, again, it's very video game-esque, and they're like, okay, I just need to get my glove, shoot him with a laser, and then we'll move on.
Well, when he does finally get it back, before he starts the laser fight, Excalibrate says,
sensing presence of occult power.
and occult power. Now, it's kind of funny now that you say that she, I'm calling the computer a she, summoned Satan in the first place, which is occult power. Mm-hmm. So what is the point?
I honestly, my thought process is that the computer wants to supersede Gwen as the only thing in Paul's life. So
I would have liked, and this is probably like a demon seed sort of thing, but I would have liked the computer to have probably tried to take over Gwen.
Yeah.
That would have possibly been a more compelling thing to work that into the story and made that a bigger through line to the story.
I don't know if that's asking a lot of Charles Band.
It might be. He's like, can I make it a gross, gooey mask or special effect puppet? No, not really.
Oh.
Can she be naked?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, let me think about that.
Yeah, we gotta start. Okay, we got a kernel there.
So, Richard Mall tempts Paul with riches and babes. And then he says no, and then Richard Mall gets mad and yells, yeah! Yeah! Like, I don't understand. I don't understand why he yelled. I guess it's just out of frustration, but it was almost like triumph even. So then the next one is a New York slasher movie.
This is probably the weirdest of the seven because it's the one that's the least fantasy oriented, but it's kind of neat, I guess. It's kind of weird. It sticks out, but it makes the overall thing feel better because of its weirdness.
He wakes up again. Like, this reminded me of Terminator because it's in an alleyway and he wakes up and he's just kind of like in his weird outfit. Mm-hmm. By the way, his outfit is just silly.
He's got it's like an American Gladiator pattern.
But it's also chaps.
Oh yeah.
Over leggings, and it's just weird, and I don't like the design of it. But he wakes up in that outfit, and then he finds a dead body of a lady in the trash or in an alleyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then cops inexplicably show up and are like, "Hey, you did it." He also has like an hour to stop Gwen from being murdered. By whom? This, and they keep on showing these scenes of this guy getting ready to go be a killer. He's got newspaper clippings of his, like, he's a serial killer. They did their work of what serial killers. Yeah,
the production design definitely had that.
What serial killers sometimes do, they have their scrapbook. This scrapbook happens to be on the wall next to his stairs. I don't know why, but yes. Oh, right. Because of the outfit.
Yeah.
The cops make fun of him.
So what are you supposed to be in that outfit? Gumby?
Where Pokey is.
Yeah.
Which just...
There's the Eddie Murphy Gumby impressions on Saturday Night Live at the time.
1984, 85, I remember watching Gumby, like in 85, on TV. It was syndicated. So I guess it's not...
It's not too much of a stretch, but it definitely dates it for... references that aren't gonna last.
Yeah, it's a huge stretch now. Like,
yeah,
if you don't remember any of that stuff, see, you just tickled my memories, so I do remember it now.
Yeah,
but I was just like, Gumby, it's a gray outfit, there's nothing covering his head. I don't,
yeah, if this had been made 3 years later, they'd be calling him a laser tag player probably.
Yeah, the villain reminds me of the lead singer of Jefferson Starship.
Oh, I could, yeah, totally.
He stalks Gwen and he stops her with 1 minute to spare, laser blasts a mirror.
Yep.
But when the slasher, when they disappear out of the scene, they just keep the camera rolling, which is totally different than any of the other mm-hmm. scenes.
Yeah, usually they just disappear.
They keep the camera rolling. The cops come running up to the slasher guy who is still slashing
in the air.
The air. Yeah. Having freaked out because they disappeared, and he's like, no, they can't be. They're still there. Why are they not there? And he's still slashing. It's actually kind of interesting.
Yeah.
It's like visually like one of the more interesting ones. You're right. It's the one that stands out, and it's the strangest.
Yeah. I feel like that scene with the slasher still like slashing at the air also like belies a little bit of the filmmaking process there, where they're like, hey, we'll put some kind of cool animation here where they're transitioning, but the slasher's stabbing them, and it just didn't work out. Not in the budget.
Right. So the next thing that he gets sent to is what's called Cave Beast. And it's another cave quest. And this one I actually thought was more another one of those ghoulie things.
Mm-hmm.
But a later iteration of ghoulie. Like, so like Ghoulie 3, like one of those heads. But apparently it's on a lady actor. And I didn't realize this until halfway through, because all you see is the top of her head looking over a stone. And they just throw rocks at each other.
They do. This is a weird one too. Because when he finally rocks him to death, you get the reveal that it's not like an evil creature, but it's actually an angel.
It's the lady who played the naked lady from the first scene.
Mm-hmm. And very possibly the lady that was going to sell him flowers. She looks like her, but I'm not 100% sure. I think she's peppered throughout this movie.
I don't know how he actually won, because he hurts the angel lady and she's laying under rubble, and then she says,
"You didn't listen. You would have won by simply walking out of the cave."
I didn't know. I had no idea.
I don't follow any of that.
Yeah.
It was like, did I blink?
No, I think at the end of the day, the takeaway here is that he could have just avoided this all by leaving the cave, but he didn't. And he kind of lost because he kind of rocked an angel to death. But
right.
The silver lining here is that the only way that she can escape that cave is by being killed, I believe. So that's a little confusing, but hey, I guess it works. Which is what I think was going through the mind of the guy who wrote that when he wrote that.
So finally, we're almost to number 7. In between that, he has another dialogue with Richard Mall. He says something to counter everything that Richard Mall says. He said something about
Ahimsa.
Where did you hear that word?
Ahimsa. Respect for every living being, for every creature that can feel.
What conceit. What hypocrisy. You mortals think you are so full of heart and soul, love and kindness. You think you're God? Looks down on you with tenderness and mercy. You're mistaken, my friend. It is humanity, not the devil that is red in tooth and claw. It is you, a god that rains down terror on you.
You have no heart and no soul, Mistima. And that's why you're bored. That's why your immortality is hell.
Prepare for the end!
And that's how he can beat Richard Mall and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's all, yeah, well, go to Mad Max Land. And so he does. It's called Desert Pursuit, and it starts in a desert airplane cemetery. If you've seen, you have, of course, My Science Project, kind of like the place where they find the science project. And then they are attacked by Rainbow Brigade. That's what I call them, because there's a doom buggy that's all rainbow colored and everything, and then there's another military type truck. And then they go on the lam, and you have laser fights and stuff. Mad Max car chase battle, totally. That's all right. But here's what I wanted to mention earlier. The whole movie, Gwen is a Luddite, and she's kind of naggy, and she's kind of just squawky, like, helpless on her own. But here, she's not helpless. She's the passenger in their vehicle that they get, but she's like, I want a gun, and gets a gun, and starts shooting the other cars, successfully blowing them up.
All right, Mistima, enough is enough! Good shot, huh?
And it was just like, why wasn't this in the entire movie? This very capable woman. Now she's completely capable, but before she wasn't. I wonder who directed this episode, and I don't remember. I didn't write it down.
Yeah, I didn't write down the individual director. There's when you have more than three directors on a film, don't expect me to remember who directed this movie.
So by the end of that, they play chicken with a car, and for some reason they can't turn the steering wheel. So when it wrecks, they're actually taken out of the scenario. And then they have a fisticuff fight.
Yep.
Paul versus Mistima. And there's no cheating except both of them cheat. Paul less so.
Yeah.
But,
and we get our Lord of the Rings ending just without the ring.
Well, I actually found that to be pretty good. Like, over the pit and having the body fall into the pit. We've seen that so many times in worse special effects, worse graphics.
Sure.
I mean, RoboCop. Come on. The dude falls off the building and it's this weird puppet. And I know that they were trying to do the perspective thing, so the arms look longer, so they made them extra long, but it didn't work at all. And it made it look bizarre, like Freddy Krueger walking down the alleyway. Yeah.
Slightly better in Die Hard.
And yeah, in Die Hard, it's actually really good. You just see the outline around the dude, and that's the problem, the blue screen outline. Yeah. But it's still really good perspective-wise, and that's how you do it. You drop off a
Nakatomi Tower
high sort of thing in slow motion, and let them land on a bag. Mm-hmm. That's fine. And here, I think they might have done something similar to that. And the magical pole. Paul's pole.
This is the...
Paul's magical glowing rod. The fake cheat.
Third version of the laser, but this one's a hard laser.
How does that work and not hurt him?
I don't know. There's so many unexplained technological advances in this movie that we're actually finding as a society now.
Yeah.
Google Glass, power gloves.
Yep. Computers that can talk to you. It's also hinted at the movie Her a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, this definitely had a Her vibe too. Totally.
So before all this brouhaha happened, he had previously proposed marriage and she was like, heck no, no way. And now she's like, yes, let's get married.
Heck yeah.
And like I said before, he's like, I don't, yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
And he's looking at the computer all like, and then it cuts to like, who did what?
Yeah.
That's the end of the movie.
And then they fill in 8 minutes worth of credits.
Yeah, so, like, your article, I still haven't read it. And I don't want you to regurgitate everything about the article because I want to go read it. You put all the work into it. I don't want this to be podcast, the article.
Gotcha.
But what do you have to share beyond what we just talked about? The nonsense of it. Like, what's a little bit of the story behind this?
Yeah, so, I mean, I didn't do a ton of research. My article was basically, like, I had never, very similar to this podcast, you know, I had never heard of this film. And I was totally 100% engrossed by the VHS box cover artwork. There's a couple different posters for this. There's the traditional, the Dungeon Master poster that's got, like, Richard Maul front and center and, like, a chessboard with all the different challenges kind of on the board, which is, it's an okay poster. But then there's a really super badass one that's got a much better version of Paul fighting against Richard Maul. This is the selling point of the movie, is Blackie Lawless from Wasp in the background. And that image is what 100% sold me on checking out this movie. I had to know what was in this. And honestly, my article is a lot of, I can't believe this exists. I'm just trying to go blow by blow to all the little things. And I'm just basically writing it in amazement as I watched the film. I was like, oh, by the way, then there's this thing that happens.
It's crazy. Okay. So it's almost, like a companion piece to this podcast. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's yeah.
All right.
So if for some reason you're hearing impaired and you want to read this podcast.
So
check out my article with Brandon.
So, yes, I think the verdict is this is a weird movie.
Yes.
Usually, like, lately, you know, I've been just saying, do you recommend it only, but not what makes this weird? But we already went through what makes this weird.
If by listening to this you don't want to watch it right now, I don't know. I think you might be soulless.
Soulless. Okay, maybe Richard Maul has your soul.
There you go. You'll want to watch this so that you're not Richard Maul-less in your experiences of film. Sorry, that was horrible.
It's not me doing it. It's fine.
There you go.
Not me dropping the bad puns. So I think, recommendation-wise, I'm just going to say mine first. You don't have to watch this movie.
Yeah.
You won't be worse off having watched it because it is short. You will have a few moments of giggles induced by confusion.
Yep.
And I don't think that that's a purely negative experience. So,
yeah.
What say you?
I would say that if you have a group of friends together and there's a bottle of wine that's potentially going to be opened, this is totally worth watching just to kind of have a weird, like, what the hell were people thinking in the 80s moment. And it's only an hour.
You're a lot more classy than other folks that would say beer.
Yeah, I was never a beer guy. I never developed a taste, so.
Yeah, neither did I.
It'd have to be a bottle of wine, maybe a mixed drink.
Yeah,
I don't know, mixed drink. If you want to make a Moscow Mule or something
like
that,
go for it. Hey, that's mine right there, except it's with Sailor Jerry instead.
There you go.
I don't like vodka, so.
Mine would be an adult Shirley Temple.
I see. So it would just be a Shirley Temple?
Well, a Shirley Temple with peach schnapps.
Oh,
Shirley Temple is usually just like a cherry Sprite or something.
Okay, I gotcha. All right. Not bad.
Yeah, it's only an hour, and it's worth the bad acting, it's worth the bad dialogue and everything else for those little bits and pieces of just what the hell.
Yeah, it's a nice diversion, put it that way. It is exactly what you said earlier, Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon, weekend, you're hot, matinee. You're just, it's in the middle of summer. It always happened in the middle of summer.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to go outside, it's too hot. Just stay inside, turn on TV, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, it comes on. So it's like, time it like you're an old school TV channel.
Yep. Hope to God that Elvira is doing the intros and outros.
Yeah.
Between the commercials.
Right. So, Sean, tell us where we can find you on the internet.
On the social medias, I'm pretty easy to find. I'm Sean Robert at Twitter. If you want to look me up on Instagram, I go by my older handle, which is Smurfwreck.
Smurfwreck.
Yes. Think what a Smurf does in his pants when he gets scared by Gargamel. That's my handle.
I see.
And gotcha. If you want to look at my website...
That would be Smurf, by the way, if you really... I Smurfed in my pants.
That's true.
Which could mean a whole bunch of things.
It could. And
it could mean three things. Actually,
yeah, I don't want to go into a rabbit hole on this, but Smurfs eat Smurf berries, which are red, and Papa Smurf is old. And is Papa Smurf incontinent? That's all I'm saying.
Yes.
And just
he's had too colloidal berries.
It's, you know, and that's why they make them rare red pants.
Colloidal Smurf berries, like that guy who had too much colloidal silver and he turned blue like Papa Smurf.
Exactly.
That really happened, but that's it's colloidal Smurf berry.
Yeah, there you go.
It's
So
I tried. Yeah, I tried. It's hard. I really did.
It's hard to tie these things together. But yeah.
So the other thing, your website.
Yeah, it's brandedinthe80s.com, 80s. I also have a moderately monthly podcast that I do with a couple of my friends called The Cult Film Club, and that's at cultfilmclub.com.
That's it. Yeah, that's what I wanted out of you.
Those are the places.
So thank you very much for joining me and going over this strange and bizarre hour-long, I guess, film.
Yep, filled right? with rage the and film? War.
Yeah, lots of rage. Lots of war. A couple moments of war. Couple
moments.
One moment of war, maybe. I think maybe the Mad Max is the war.
Yeah, that's the closest they really got to war.
That's it, yeah. So thank you for joining me. I'm glad you did. Good night, everybody.
Thank you for having me, and good night.
I've got my steamer. It burns.